Bonjour, enchanté to everyone. Je suis désolé, mon français est un peu. So I will speak a bit of franglais. And some of my slides are nicely in français, thanks to Celia. Other ones will be in English, thanks to me. Okay, so today I wanted to sort of talk about Du Bois and the connection, I think, between my own work and his, and largely what I think we can still learn from him more broadly, because his work still remains quite relevant. Just to give you a sense of him, so here is what I'm calling a selected works by Dr. Du Bois. As you can see, there are just 24 here, and I'm telling you, this is selected. I mean, there he wrote novels, he wrote plays, he wrote poetry, and he wrote his own autobiography twice over. And so there is a ton of work. And today I am just taking it from the part that En Rouge, Le Philadelphia Negro. So as you can see, I am only talking about a very small slice of a brilliant man's long career and over many, many topics. So I just wanted to show you the breadth of his knowledge and contribution. So to take us to Philadelphia in the Seventh Ward, which Celia nicely put into historical context, here it is here. At the time that Du Bois would have been there, this is circa 1899, a ward map of the city of Philadelphia. The part in red is the neighborhood that he made most famous, the 7th Ward, in particular, the black section of the 7th Ward. Just to give you a sense also of where black people are geographically located today. So here it would be south, here would be north, and then over here would be west. And as you can see, we have two rivers in Philadelphia, the Delaware, which goes north and south, and then the Schuylkill, which goes east and west. So when we're talking about black people in Philadelphia, we're talking about a population that immediately was situated in this block in a very dense area with limited opportunity. And over the century, we see them dispersed across these three major areas. So by 1910, what you see here is the 7th Ward again. Each dot represents 250 black people. One thing I like to really point out about this is, as you can see, the spaces are filled in across the entire arrondissement, except black people actually didn't occupy the entire space. So the spatiality of the dots does not indicate the entire neighborhood was black, but instead, that's how many black people are fitting in there, and they're using the space so they can actually put all the dots in. And basically, the black part of the ward was about that large. So take all of those dots and put them all up in that one section. So here we see some early dispersion of black people after Du Bois leaves. So this is about 20 years after he finishes his work. And we see black people already filling out some of the areas that we most prominently think about as where black people are. So early on, I just wanted to show the map to give you a sense of the spatial geography of race in Philadelphia at the turn of the century. So here, nicely en français, is something I'm going to pull on for today, which is a reflection that Du Bois offers in his autobiography in 1968 about what he thought the Philadelphia Negro was up to. He writes, "The Philadelphia Negro revealed the Negro group as a symptom, not a cause, as a striving, palpitating group and not an inert, sick body of crime, as a long transient development and not a transient occurrence." And so this particular passage has always been very meaningful for me, because part of what he shows, which I think is super important, is that history matters. So he's saying, when we look at the black experience writ large, we should be thinking about history first, because where they are is historically informed. They didn't just wake up in the 7th Ward without jobs and poor conditions. Instead, that is a long historic development that we are finding in that particular place and time. The other thing that he says, which for some people actually still isn't common knowledge, is that black people are not the cause of any of these problems, but instead symptoms of a problem. So what he offers here is a way to think about the black experience. And I said in an earlier presentation, using one of my favorite songs by Bob Marley, Small Axe, "If you are a big tree, we are a small axe ready to cut you down, to cut you down." The idea is that the black experience is a small axe that helps you see everything else, right? So you don't just study the black experience because you're interested in them causing the problems that they have, but instead looking at that experience as a window into all sorts of inequality, because it all, for one reason or another, falls upon the shoulders, bodies, and lives of black people, Philadelphia being a very great example. So I want to apply this. I have a couple of clips that I'm going to show because I think they really highlight some of what he's talking about and thinking about history. One of the examples will be from the US. The other example was going to be from the film Le Bon des Femmes, Girlhood, which recently came out not too long ago. And what is interesting, and I just want to set them up really quickly, in the one clip we'll see what we call in America shopping while black. So one, we see in America, there is a sort of narrative of talking about being followed in a store because you are a black person and thus prone to criminality. So I'm going to follow you around the store. What we'll see in the Girlhood clip is an exact similar performance without the language of talking about that. So one reads as particularly contemporary, the French example, while the other in America seems more historic. But I want to show today that they're very similar, which is why I'm going to show them both together. So, clip one. And apparently this guy who's here, just to give you a sense, has made himself super popular. This was like then featured in a lot of different things. He does a series of Vine videos, so about 6 to 30 second clips, where he walked through a series of stores. And as you can see here, and I'm gonna play it, he shows all of the white folks following him. So he catches them, you know, look at that. See, they're following me. Okay, so, c'est ça.
Shopping while black Vine video goes viral. Rashid Polo is an overnight celebrity whose recent Vine videos are shedding light on a sensitive topic, shopping while black.
She can follow me around the store the whole time. There she goes, she comes.
While shopping at a convenience store back in February, Polo noticed a pattern developing. No matter where he went in the store, a suspicious attendant always seemed to follow. As she busied herself with random tasks, she cast vilifying stares at Polo, who eventually had enough. He whipped out his cell phone and began recording.
She think I'm stealing. She think I'm stealing. Look.
If you're saying to yourself right now that racial shopping discrimination doesn't exist, chances are you're a white person. Barney's New York, to give just one example, has repeatedly been accused of mistreating black customers. In the case of 19-year-old Trayon Christian, undercover police officers arrested him when he walked out of Barney's with a $350 belt, despite having shown them proof of purchase. Heck, even Oprah can't avoid racial profiling. Last year, a Swiss clerk refused to show the media mogul a handbag, saying it would cost too much. Polo's second Shopping While Black Vine video has garnered 14 million loops in a little over a week. He's attracted more than 15,000 followers so far. What do you think? Was race or age a factor in the employee's awkward surveillance of the teenage shopper? Leave your thoughts in the comments.
Okay, so that's example one. And now for the clip from La Bande de Femme, basically what we see here is there'll be a young girl. I'm just going to give you some background because we won't be watching the entire film, which I suggest you do. It's very awesome. But it takes place in one of the banlieues of Paris. And the idea is that there is a young girl who's about 16 who was just recently told that she won't be able to go to general high school and instead go to vocation high school. And she's very upset about that. And she leaves out of her middle school or less than high school. And she is now basically in this moment trying to figure out her next step. While she's walking out of the school building, she runs into a group of girls, three women in particular, who invite her to come hang out with them. And they look like, I guess, you know, they might be up to some things, as we say in the States. And so she at first says, no, I'm not interested. You know, I'm going to keep going about my business. And then a group of guys, one of them being a guy who she really is in love with in certain ways, comes up to the group of girls and starts talking. And then she's like, oh, hey, wait a minute. I want to hang out with them. The part that we're going to see is when they decide to go to Paris. Why I want to show it, one, is because I think in my, you know, short time here, it really does reflect the journey that black people take to get into Paris and then perhaps what that experience is like. So we're going to see them all gather and then travel. Let's see. So as you can see in the clip, we see similar realities across very different contexts and political spaces. And in some ways, with the guy over in America, because of a certain language in some ways coming out of a Du Boisian tradition, he's able to playfully show these things using a particular language, where in this particular case with the film, they don't ever call it anything, right? Other than, you know, they sort of intimidate the woman and then go about their business, but a very similar reality. And I think in many ways is going back to the quote here from Du Bois. Then he also offers a thing about the seventh ward that I'm going to tie into a couple of follow-ups I've done on his work. So we can see thus that the seventh ward presents an epitome of nearly all the Negro problems, that every class is represented in the varying conditions of life as well. What does he mean by that? In my mind, there are three key facets of urban Black life worlds that we can take out of Du Bois. The very first one that he suggests is that heterogeneity matters, meaning that Black people are a diverse population. People often think, and we see in that clip, those four girls are from very different backgrounds, and their families are from very different ethnic origins, but for whatever reason, in this moment, they are all just Black, you know? And this is very similar in the U.S. as well, where Black people are just Black, that's it. But Black people hail from the West Indies, from Africa, from Canada, from the south of the U.S., from the north of the U.S., from all over the place. And in fact, that heterogeneity matters because in Du Bois' work, he often finds that Black people don't agree about a lot of things. So when we're thinking about some of the conditions of where we're finding Black people, it isn't just about white domination or what white people are doing to them, but also about the discord amongst Black people. Meaning that, you know, for example, in my own research, a very early population that entered Philadelphia during the time that Du Bois was doing his research was a Jamaican population, which actually was well-educated and came from a professional class back home. They arrived to Philadelphia, and they're not welcomed by the native Black Philadelphians because they see them as foreign. So when Du Bois is writing about a lot of the issues that happens, one of the larger questions he has is, why are they not on the same page, right? In my own book, I find, for example, housing conditions are bad, and people are dying in the housing, but Black people in Philadelphia are not on the same page about whether or not that's an issue. Some even go so far as to suggest that it is because there is a southern rural population that has come to Philadelphia and they don't know how to live in a city. So once we teach them how to live in a city, things will be better. So that isn't white people saying something about Black people, but instead a conversation amongst Black people. So heterogeneity matters not only because it is important for us to understand that Black is a vast category that includes many peoples from many places, but also that that same reality makes difficult the ability to forge alliances or particular political realities. The next thing that we also see in that work, and I showed in the map earlier, is that there are high levels of residential segregation. So the residential segregation, as Du Bois suggests, is on purpose in some ways. It isn't necessarily intentional in the sense that somebody pulls out a map and then puts all Black people there. It is a whole bunch of individuals with their own discriminatory practices all happening at the same time, creating a geographic reality about where Black people are. So black neighborhoods or Black homeownership and all these other things are really being constricted by all of these practices that limit the amount of space Black people can actually occupy. This is something that Du Bois also finds as well. The other thing that I point out in an article called, where I talk about the ecological conundrum, which is here, is that what is very interesting in all of these cases, especially when we think about the urban experience, is that cities are metropoles of business. That is originally how they were founded and the idea behind them. Except Black people tend to be very urbanized, and especially in the US, upwards of 85% of the Black population is urban or near urban. So they are urban, near urban, living near a metropole of employment, but being highly unemployed. So this is a conundrum that, you know, we see in real time today, but begins, I think, in Du Bois' estimation earlier. So the idea here is you look at a population, if we use a Chicago school model, for example, that suggests that there is a relationship between a division of labor and where people are set in place. He is saying when it comes to Black people, that just is not the case. So we have people living directly in the center of the city near employment being very underemployed. Why is that a reality? Du Bois suggests that we have to have a real fruitful and generative understanding of race to really figure out why that is actually the case. I also, while I've been here, I had some time to, you know, go around a couple of places, and I have a clip, a very short one, only a couple of seconds, that I am going to call Anywheresville in the globe. Because, as you will see, until I tell you, perhaps, you won't know where this is because it looks very similar, I would say, to the Banya here or to inner city neighborhood in Philadelphia or New York or Chicago. And I'm going to play it and I will make a particular point about it. Let's see what this is. Thank you. So this is in just outside of Amsterdam in the black suburb known as Bijlmer. And so, merci, monsieur. So basically what's interesting about it is that, you know, Amsterdam and France have very different, you know, backgrounds, very different histories in certain ways, but black people are set in space in exactly the same location. You literally take the train to a bus and you're out here in this particular suburban area with all this social housing, right? So everything looks the same. It's just a housing complex on top of a housing complex. We see black people there, people on motorcycles having a rally. We see a mother, you know, cussing out her child, and then people coming off of the train. And what struck me in this particular example is that even though there isn't necessarily a racial conversation that happens in Europe, it is quite curious and odd to me that black people are situated in a very specific way. So even if there isn't a way of talking about it, it is very interesting that black people are clustered on these edges of the city in much the same way black people get clustered on the insides of cities in the U.S. So to move forward in some ways, what I focus on in my own work are what I call the four faces of political agency. By that, what I try to get at is the ways in which black people are proactive about their realities and how they go about enacting change purposefully, intentionally, and sometimes accidentally. And there are four faces which have been translated, merci, Celia, cadrage or framing. So the way you frame your issue, that even if you are, you know, disadvantaged and you are oppressed, your ability to frame a narrative is still within your capability. And people have powerful ways of framing their narratives. So for example, in Philadelphia, in my book, I found there was an attempt to build a roadway through the black neighborhood. And black residents framed it in a very powerful way. Given limited resources, these are very poor people who don't have a lot of money, but they were very savvy and they framed the roadway, for example, as environmental injustice. This roadway will be a highway that will create air pollution all around our children. Why should our children die and suffocate under the fumes while white children live freely in pure air? Why should there be a wall erected that separates our neighborhood physically from the rest of the city? These are the ways that black people can frame their experiences politically to enact or bring about some level of change. Then also voting, of course, especially in a sort of democratic situation, the idea is that you vote, you know, you go out and you pick particular officials. In many cases, we know that there are not any black officials. And actually, while I've been in Paris, and I would say this is a problem for Paris, why are there no black officials? This is quite odd to me that there are black wards. Arrondissement 20 is Très Noir, and there are no black representatives from that arrondissement. That reminds me of 1862 in Philadelphia in the 7th Ward. Quite odd. I will leave that all to you to figure out. But it is just to say that there isn't that representation happening. Now, in America, we've learned that a brown face in a high place does not necessarily do a whole lot per se, but symbolically, it means a move forward. So that I want to leave with you on arrondissement 20. Okay, mobilization, the idea that people meet and gather to talk about things, you know, that is actually a way to be politically active and have agency as well. So in many cases, what we find across all sorts of areas and conditions is that people gather to talk about their issues and conditions. And what I found in Philadelphia is that people did it often and simultaneously alongside policymakers doing or not doing their job. So when the housing was bad, black Philadelphians of all classes wrote to the president letters, a whole letter campaign to get money on their behalf. They didn't wait on other people to do that. When people were not charging them the right prices when they were buying their goods and services, they decided to meet and they boycotted all of those businesses. These are the types of things when you mobilize to enact what your opinion is when you're feeling voiceless. And then last is migration, which I separate into two things, primary and secondary. Primary, in my estimation, is when you move from one geographic area to an entirely new and distant geographic area. What I focus on for my part is secondary migration, or the movement within a city by a particular population. And in a place like Philadelphia, what is very interesting is Though the black population isn't always highly regarded, the city does change based on where black people decide to move. Or as the phrase goes, people vote with their feet. So where you place yourself is a political act. And in many ways, we find because white people don't like living with black people migrating en masse to a particular location distinctly changes the racial geography of a city, both in real time and historically as well. Merci beaucoup.